Hey, what's going on, everybody? Welcome back to the channel. My name is Jacob Restituto, and I'm a musician from Northport, New York, and today we have the absolute pleasure of having Davin Kingston here on the channel. Phenomenal producer, phenomenal artist himself. Very much looking forward to this conversation. So, Davin, thank you so much for taking the time out of your very busy schedule, man. You cranking out the tracks yourself, cranking out the tracks with other people producing, and you have some things in the works that I'm excited to get into that seems like they're pretty cool collaborations coming up. So, thank you, man.
Definitely. Thank you for having me.
Really absolutely agree. You want to hear a little funny story before we get started? My biggest nemesis in life currently is time zones, and I'm always like trying to figure them out. You know, I'm in New York, you're in LA. For some reason I thought that the time zone thing was different, and I was like, oh, I was sitting here waiting at 2 o'clock for me, which would have been 11 o'clock for you. Meanwhile, it's 3 o'clock, but hey, I'd rather be early than late. I've only missed one interview because of time zones being late, so we're all right. We're doing all right. That's funny, man. Cool stuff. So for people that aren't super familiar with who you are just yet, can you give a little backstory and, you know, just a little bit of your genesis as an artist and as a producer?
Yeah, definitely. My name is Davin Kingston. I am an artist, writer, producer. I'm currently based in LA, but I only moved out here 9 months ago. So I'm kind of more so in the beginning of my writer producer journey, but definitely like feel like I have a footing. You know, so
where did you come from?
Yeah, I'm originally from Orlando, Florida.
Oh, really? Very cool.
Yeah.
I have family down in Orlando.
I escaped.
Constantly down there.
Yeah. How I feel about it. I escaped.
It's funny, man. So you move out to LA. How did you, you've been cranking out some tracks lately, especially as a producer and you mentioned co-writer. How did that start? You know, you moved to, what set things in motion to move to LA? And then how did you get your feet wet when you moved here?
Yeah.
We're there.
There's a lot of context because before this, I was in Boston and I went to Berklee College of Music. So that honestly really set me up to move out here. And I got very fortunate to be signed in college. So maybe it's better just to start at the beginning from like Florida to now.
Let's hear it, man.
Yeah. So grew up in Florida. Honestly, my dad is a musical, but the rest of my family isn't. And I wasn't even into music until I was like 10, maybe 12. I did piano lessons, guitar lessons growing up, but none of it ever like really stuck. Mm-hmm. My dad has even told me now, he was like, yeah, when you were like 4 or 5, I thought kid's not musical, which is crazy that he says that because it's now literally my job.
Yeah. For
you know, proved him wrong, I guess. No, but like, so they tried to like, I tried to be in music. I mean, I tried a bunch of things as you do when you're a kid, like sports.
Sure.
Whatever. Music. And I got into video editing actually, because I was super into like doing YouTube and stuff like that. So I had a gaming channel for a little bit, which was like a little phase. I had like a video editing channel. And then I finally landed on music. And from there, it was like around 14 years old that I got into producing and writing songs. So I've been producing since then. And that just manifested in the form of like making music with my friends in school. So in high school, I was making albums.
Hmm.
I had a band. We were called Away From Stress. You can find our music. It's bad.
It's really bad. That shows progress, man. That shows progress.
It does show progress. I mean, like, really, it's interesting because I look back and like, I would not have seen the potential.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Like, I think a lot of it was really hard work. And mm-hmm. It took a long time to get good at what I do. But the thing is, I wasn't doing it because of that. I was doing it because I loved it.
Sure.
And I love like the like idea of getting better at something through hard work. Is like,
that's the funny thing about art is like when you start off, you think you're amazing. And then you realize 2 years later that you're not. And you think you're a lot better than you are. And then you realize two years later from that, that you thought you were amazing back then. You know, it's like all these stages, you're like, it takes a level of self-awareness to be like, yeah, I'm a lot better than I used to be, but I'm still not anywhere. You know, I still have a long way to go kind of thing, right?
No, it's the artistic cycle of being like, oh, you finally get to the point where you're like, oh, now I'm good. And then about like 2 weeks later, you look back and you're like, oh.
Exactly.
And maybe it's 2 years. But I mean, I loved it. And I was like showing music to my friends. I like always... There's a couple of my friends in high school that actually listened and was like, yeah, this is sick. And I listened back and I'm like, oh, it was so bad. You know, thank you for like saying that, because it really like, you know, it's important to have that support system and
sure.
Have people around you who really think it's cool. So I was doing that all throughout high school, but it was always like a side hobby. You know, even my dad did music, but he was always like, you shouldn't, it should be like a hobby. It should be like a side thing. And then like, I was good at math, so going to more of like a traditional engineering or computer science type thing. So throughout high school, that was kind of always my plan in the back of my head was like, okay, when I go to college, I'm gonna go to a nice college. I'm gonna go into computer science or engineering. And then I'm gonna do music as a side gig and kind of like, you know, maybe that works out, maybe it doesn't, type like energy. And it only when I was like actually faced with the decision of going to college that I really, that was the moment where I decided like, oh, I'm gonna do this with my life. Because basically the whole story there is I applied to a bunch of schools, and all of them for computer science and engineering. And I got denied from like everything, which that like looking back,
Sure.
I'm so thankful for, honestly, because I would have done it. You know, I would have just gone. But like my one shot at music was I was trying to do the dual degree program between Harvard and Berkeley. And like that was my way of appeasing my family and like what they say about getting a nice education, following the more traditional route, and also being able to do music. Because like my grandparents, for example, would be like, oh, he's going to Harvard. And I would be like, oh, I'm going to Berkeley. I'm doing music. Let's go.
How does that work? I've never heard of that, the dual degree program between the two.
Yeah, I have a couple friends that have done it. It's like you're mainly at Harvard, but you're enrolled at both schools and you can take as many classes at Berkeley as you want. So you
Wow.
have both the very educational, and you take like a traditional major at Harvard. So you have the very intense educational side over there, and then you have intense musical
So
education.
you were accepted into Harvard. Is it the same process of getting accepted into Harvard like every other thing else?
So I was waitlisted actually. And that was like I had tried for that, so that was like at that point, that was the hardest I worked for anything in my life, was to try to get into this Harvard and Berkeley program. You know, and I failed. So that was like a moment for me where I was like, oh, I guess I shouldn't do music, honestly, you know? And I ended up getting accepted to NYU for computer science. So this was like after the point I've been beaten down from the Harvard and Berkeley thing. And I was like,
Sure.
that was my one shot. I tried, I messed up, and I was going to NYU for computer science. And I was signing up for class. I actually completely enrolled. There's like a newspaper article about me from like my hometown being like, he's going to NYU, blah, 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 you know, and stuff like that. Like I was enrolled. I had a roommate, was fully ready to move in. And I was signing up for classes actually. It was like late June 2018. And I couldn't sign up for any music classes at all because they keep the school so separate. And I'd have been expecting like, okay, I'm going to go to com do computer science at NYU, but maybe I'm going to take some music classes at Steinhardt or the other schools. And it was this moment where I was like really faced with it. I was like, okay, if I do this, I cannot do music. And like I thought about what my life would look like. And I thought about what I love to do. And I was like, I think I would hate this, you know, if I couldn't do music at all. And then I was like, so if that's that important to me and if it's that much, like I fill my free time with it, what am I doing? And it was like, you know, at that point, I'm 18. I'm choosing colleges. There hasn't been like a big life decision like that,
Sure.
really, you know? And this was the moment where, completely independently of anybody, I was like, okay, I'm going to do music. And there isn't a plan B. There's like no going back. There is the only person that's going to make this happen for me is me. And it was like this big moment where I decided, I called back Berkeley and I was like, please. I know I turned you guys down or like declined the offer or whatever, but take my money. I would love to go. And they were like, yeah, of course, we'll take you back. They like figured it all out. I didn't have a dorm room when I moved. So I just like, I sent it to Boston. I drove up without a dorm room. I didn't even know where I was going to live in Boston. But I knew like that was I was like, I'm going to go to Berkeley and I'm going to work my ass off, you know? Because I'm not just gonna like sit through this like 4-year college experience and be like, hopefully I end up with like a job at the end of it, or you know, it was very like I'm not taking this for granted. You know, I knew basically I'd seen the other path, and I was like, I don't want to do that option, so this is my only option. And people talk about it, but I do really think it is important. Like in that moment, for me not to have like a plan B or something to fall back on was like scary, but also really important. You know,
it's interesting you say that. I just about a couple hours ago filmed another interview with somebody else, much farther in their careers than both of us. Like they've been doing it for 20 years kind of thing. And so the guy has a lot of experience, a lot of life lessons kind of thing. And one thing we were very much related on is the fact that like this is kind of like just you give it your all kind of thing. And we were talking about not having plan B's. And at this point, I have a lot of people that reach out to me saying like, hey, you know, like, I'd love to be a musician kind of thing. Do you have any tips? Or I really like music. I'm considering being a musician. And I always think back to like me, myself in that position. And I'm sure that you could relate to that. This is like, to some degree, like there is no plan B. Like I'm always wary of those conversations because I'm like, if you're debating it and you're questioning it, like to some degree, I'm like, I don't know how much you really love it. And to make it in this industry, you really need to love it because it sucks a lot, you know? Like, it's hard, you know? It's hard in any industry, but, like, you're not only are you an entrepreneur, but you're an entrepreneur in the arts, and the arts quality is subjective, you know what I mean? It's not like you could be an architect where you're building a building, and if it stands up, it works, you know? Like, it's very, you know, not subjective in, like, you know, the other fields of work, but... Yeah, so I totally relate to that, and it's like this giving your all kind of thing. It's like if you have you have one foot in each door. If you have a plan B, I feel like to some degree.
Yeah, and the thing is, you're competing. You know, like really realistically, you're competing with hundreds of people who aren't, you know, and they're fully in it. They're like, I mean, I work like, I try to work. Recently, I was doing like 7 days a week, honestly, which was extreme, but you know, like it's like. You spend your free time doing it. If it's something you really love, like for me, I was spending my free time doing music.
Yeah.
And like, let's say this was the kind of the logic in my mind. Let's say I went to NYU and I was doing computer science and the kind of music on the side. I would have been at NYU with these people who love computer science, who like spent their free time learning about it, watching YouTube videos, touching up on it. And they would have been the ones to excel and get these opportunities at the school. I would have been like, probably okay. You know, but I wouldn't be like when some big job opportunity comes in, but like the teacher's like, oh, Davin should get this. He loves it. He's working hard. And I would be doing music on the side in all my free time. And at that point, it's like, I'm just holding myself back from both sides. You know, it's like,
yeah.
And now, like when I went to Berkeley, I was producing all the time. I was writing all the time. I was like in my free time because it's like what I love to do. And I was learning about it. And it all compounded into this point where it's like, you know, if it's something you really love to do and you're doing it in your free time, there's like no way you can't excel, you know, because you're doing it literally all the time.
Yeah.
You know, and it's really like, that's why I preach like that my music was so bad in high school because it was. And it's like, it's okay because it's about the work ethic. I've never met someone really successful in this industry who didn't work really, really hard for it or deserve it.
No. That's the truth, man.
You know?
Absolutely. And
I think that's the outside perception looking in is like, oh, how did this person get success and like have this song and stuff? But like from the inside, it's like there is no mistakes or like accidents because everyone I know who's really successful worked their asses off for it and they're so deserving.
Sure. Very interesting. So you go to Berkeley, spend your time at Berkeley, and you study music, or Berkeley and Harvard, technically. So you have two degrees, technically, from two different universities.
So I didn't get into the Harvard thing. So at this point, it was like just.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Yeah. So I went to Berkeley, and I just like for me it was. I think I approached it with this mindset, of like I need this to work, and since it was. There wasn't really at this point, I realized none of the other options would make me happy like this. I just got there and I just really worked. Like, I mean, I was producing all the time. I was talking to every teacher, going to like office hours. I was going to the career center. I was talking to them about just getting my name in there. I was like, I'm the producer. Da, da, da. I started like, I got a student job at the career center, which is like the association into the music industry, like the real world. So like if A&Rs came from record labels, they would talk to the career center. Therefore, by working at the career center as a student, I got to like show the ANRs around the school. And it was like, I mean, anything and everything that I could do, I was working with. I mean, I literally, my policy was to never say no for producing for someone. So if someone reached out and was like, I heard you worked on this song for this student, would you like to? I would just be like, I did literally every project I possibly could. So it just like gradually started to build. And the thing is, I wasn't even good at the beginning, really, but you kind of just like the mindset, like I was telling myself, I'm a producer, I'm a producer. And then you gradually become one, kind of
Yeah.
like that's who you are.
And it's interesting when you first start off, like as long as you know a little bit more than the person that you're producing for to some degree, like you're better. Like I agree, because when I produce for people in the past as well. I don't do it much anymore, but like when I was doing earlier in my career, people would come to be like, "Hey, I heard your music. Could you produce my music?" kind of thing. And like the only I my music was at that time wasn't phenomenal, but it was just because of the fact that I knew more than they did, and they didn't know how to where even begin. So they were like, "Your stuff is better than whatever I could do." You know what I mean? So it's an and then you gradually continue just to get better. But those opportunities are what make you better. I come from the mentality of a lot of the mentality of it, the qu quantity over quality to some degree, and quality comes with quantity, because I like to release a lot of music because one, it makes I feel like it makes me a better songwriter. If I'm writing 100 songs versus if I'm really meticulously doing one song, you know what I mean? Or same thing with producing. Like if I produce a hun I'm sure you notice this, that in the last 10 tracks you've produced, right? Every one of them slightly different or very different, and you have to think about and figure and factor in different things. Like because one track might call for a cello, and you got to figure out how to make that cello sit properly. One track might call for a synth or a heavy sub bass. And it's like if you focus on one track and one song alone, you're not gonna learn all. You're not gonna learn how to mix a saxophone in a whatever rock piece. You know what I mean? But if you're doing a
Definitely.
rock piece and a pop piece, you could learn all these different traits,
Yeah. It's all like, I kind of contribute those first years at Berkeley. And I wasn't even really writing that much other than for myself. At this point, I was like more known just as a producer, but it was like, those were my 10,000 hours. And the thing is, the 10,000 hours is never over, in my opinion, especially with music.
Absolutely.
Music is like one of those things you can infinitely get better at.
Agreed.
Like, which is why I love it so much, is because I could see myself doing it in 20 years, like still being like needing to get better at this. It's not like there's no like end goal, which is it's about the journey. But that was like a lot of that was my 10,000 hours. I would do a track and it'd be like a track I never would have had to do before. And a lot of it's even just like talking. I mean, that's like years of experience where I'm like talking to artists, figuring out how to communicate with them about what they want. I use every single day now, like professionally.
Absolutely.
And that's like, I mean, that's years of experience. That's not like something you can learn in a classroom or, and I think that was, I noticed a lot of my classmates, who are also in the production idea or something like that, like just didn't do it as much. So my advice really, like, 'cause it doesn't have to be Berkeley. It doesn't have to be some music school. It's just like, just do what you want to do. Just like, if you want to write songs over and over again. Because you look at these, like someone like Ed Sheeran. Ed Sheeran is like absolutely known in the industry for writing 10 songs a day. And that means he has a terrible batting average. Because if he writes 1,000 songs, maybe one of those is a hit. That's one in 1,000, which is like theoretically bad batting average. But in music, that's like incredible. And it's still the song. Whether it took him 1,000 songs to get there, it took him 10,000 songs to get there. There's just like, there's nothing beats just doing the thing over and over again.
100%. Absolutely. So you go from Berkeley, and then how did you decide to move out to California?
At Berkeley, I was producing for people all the time, and then I did this big studio internship at, actually in Pennsylvania. So that was pretty random. But I worked with Grammy nominated producers, Carson Slovak and Grant McFarlane. And they did like a lot of heavy metal music. So I was working on, which is like not a music that I'd ever listened to or been into. But at the studio, I was working with like August Burns Red and a couple of like big era, the band, a couple of like big metal bands. And that was like another experience where I really, really got better because it was such like personal training from such a great mentor. And that's like another piece of advice I always have is like, I mean, find your champions who are going to fight for you. Like, really, it was crazy because that was like a summer internship. And my production from the summer before that to the summer afterwards was like, I mean, not even comparable. But so I did that. And then my sophomore year of college, I got into this class at Berkeley called Cara DiGuardi's Bootcamp. And I don't wonder how to describe this class. Basically, it's a songwriting producing class. So you a whole bunch of people apply from the school and 15 songwriters get in, 5 producers.
Wow.
Yeah, so I applied as a producer. So I got in as a producer. And it's just like a very intense class where every week it's you bring in a new song. You get assigned a random group. So you have 3 songwriters and a producer or something like that. I forget what the exact like ratio is. But then you create a song that week. And then the next week you play it in class and Cara DiGuardi critiques, who, if you don't know Cara DiGuardi, she's like a incredibly successful A&R. And also songwriter. She was a BMI Songwriter of the Year several times back in the 2000s. So she was an incredible songwriter that's now become an A&R. She signed like Jason Derulo. She signed John Bellion, Ingrid Andress. So I like went into this class knowing it was a gigantic opportunity because I'm a big John Bellion fan. And he was kind of like what got me into producing and writing. So I went into this class with the mindset, Cara DiGuardi signed John Bellion. I want to get signed by Cara DiGuardi, you know? And this is all like leading to how I got out to LA because,
sure,
you know, what enabled me to move out here and make it work. So I took this class and I really like the first week, this is the thing, the first week, I went in with like the best song I'd ever made. And I was like, this is the best song I've ever made. She's going to love this. I'm going to get signed. You know, it was like genuinely this mindset.
Sure.
I went in and she absolutely ripped to shreds. She was like, this, I just don't get it. This is like not good. It's not emotionally in touch. The song is bad. The production doesn't feel in tune with the song. And just like ripped it apart. And I was heartbroken about that for like 30 minutes. And then I was more inspired than I'd ever been in my life. And like, I thank her so much for push. Like so many of the teachers at Berkeley would just be like, yeah, your song's good. Shoot along. But like, the truth is music industry is incredibly competitive. What have I succeeded in like a professional pop sense? You are competing with like Ed Sheeran. You're competing with Ryan Tedder. Competing with John Bellion, these people, which is like a scary thought. Don't think about that. But
yo, for real, I hadn't really actually thought about that. That's pretty wild.
You know, you are like at all times. You know, so you have to raise your bar constantly.
Yes.
You know, like that upward trajectory has to always be there, and it's important to have someone who comes in like and tells you your songs aren't good enough, so that you know to get better. You know,
I think that's one of the most important things to for anybody that is an artist. And being an artist can be incredibly lonely because there's not a lot of people that are like-minded, essentially. But that's the beautiful part about the internet or just songwriting groups or anything. I think it's super important to find like-minded people that you can learn to trust and then get genuine feedback, because there's nothing, at least for myself, there's nothing more frustrating than like having like an 85% finished song, showing it to somebody, looking for genuine feedback to see like, hey, I know I'm not the best musician in the world. Like, give me some feedback. And they're like, no, it sounds great. I'm like, no, just something. Tell me the hi-hats are too loud. Just tell me something, man. Like, But like, so when you meet those people, it's an incredible opportunity to really grow as an artist.
Yeah, absolutely. And you want to keep those people close, like always,
Absolutely.
you know? And like, I thank her so much that she pushed me in that way, because I thought I was really good.
Yeah.
And now I look back at right where I was at that time, and I was like, wow. And I still look at where I'm at, and I'm like, I have so much to learn. And
Sure.
it's kind of always that mindset. I mean, but anyways, was in the class, got the first tongue torn to shreds, and then from then on, like, really dedicated myself to like learning songwriting as a skill, you know? And I went super hard on that for like that entire class. Like, I was writing, I don't know, I was doing like 4 to 5 sessions a week where I was co-writing with people. And also, co-writing is a different skill too, which all these, all you have to kind of approach everything as like its own skill and challenge that you can learn and like move on from. Because I think a lot of
Yeah.
people, music is like a very natural, like, not, you know, you can look at like some other subject, engineering, and you'd be like, oh yeah, you learn this math subject, this math subject, and you learn this math subject, and then you're a good engineer. And music is the exact same way. It's like co-writing, writing, auto-tune, producing, recording, setting up mic placement. It's like all of these skills that turn into one song, you
That's
know?
a great analogy because you're right. So many people think it's just, oh, you're naturally musical, you have good rhythm, whatever the case is, right? And they don't recognize the fact that there's so many different skill sets you have to learn. Even as an artist, you forget that you have to learn, and you can become very hard on yourself, but like if you were in an engineering program, you would recognize the fact of, oh, I can't do that yet because I don't know how to do this. And it's like that's easy to, it's a very linear A and B, but it's the music industry isn't sort of like that. So as you recognize that, it's like, oh, let's stop for a sec. Let's learn this, really learn this. Let's get really good at songwriting, and then we'll get really good at producing. And obviously, you can do them at the same time, but like it's being conscious of the fact that like things aren't always innate. And 95% of people, it's not innate. It's just a lot of hard work.
It is like, I mean, it's so much hard work. And, you know, I spent like a month at that recording studio learning how to do vocal tuning or like vocal editing. And now I use it in every single song I do, but it's like,
What's
that's like
one,
one.
let me ask you about that. Let's nitpick that for 2 seconds. What's one misconception about vocal tuning that or one thing that people you think people are doing wrong that you've learned in that month or say?
That people
Or
do
one
wrong.
tip that you might have?
Let me think about that for a sec. I mean, it was kind of incredible. I honestly learned how far vocals could be off and that you make them good. But on the counter end of that, like, you can't like fake the emotion of something. And that translates like outside of vocal editing. But like songwriting wise, I think the biggest songwriting thing I learned in that class, Kara, was like everything has to be authentic, you know, and
I
you can't.
laugh because that is the exact answer that the previous conversation I just had gave was authenticity. So I apologize, but continue, please.
No, it's true. I just like it, really is true. And you'll notice that with like the most successful songwriters or even the most successful songs, there's something within that song or that artist that like resonates globally with the majority of the population it comes across. You know, and it's like, why? And I like to think about it in movies. Like, why does a movie resonate with so many people versus another movie that doesn't? And there's usually like, there's always some like deep truth in there or deep human experience. It's like, it just has to be genuine, you know, it can't be faked. And that's what a lot of people miss.
I find that very interesting on more of like the pop end of things because I'm always trying to dissect it and stuff. Like, you think of something like some of the biggest tracks in the world, like Ed Sheeran's "Shape of You," that was huge. It's just huge, right? And it's interesting to think about like a typical song. Like you look at that and you compare like Taylor Swift's like "Love Story," right? Like a classic Taylor Swift track, right? They're very, very different. One is super specific. One is like, telling her exact story. Like one is like you feel like she's pouring her heart out. And another is like, hey, I met this girl at a club and I'm, we became friends, kind of, or we started dating kind of thing. And it's interesting that like that simple thought can become a global phenomenon.
Yeah, it is interesting. Like, I've thought about this a lot because, you know, at first when Kara told me that or taught us that, it was like everything has to be authentic. I start to think of songs like that, Ed Sheeran, Shape of You, and I'm like, is that authentic? It's not like deep. But the thing is, it's still real. It's just like, I'm in love with the shape of you. Anybody has thought that and on this earth, you know? And when he's like writing that, I guarantee he's thinking about somebody. And it's a real emotion, it's real experience. You know, it doesn't have to be like the deepest thing in the world. It's like, I don't know, like a club song. Why does like a club song resonate with the world? And it's like something about that was like a feeling or like something real, you know? And I mean, that's like not the most like, there are songs which poke holes in that.
Sure, and even in the last conversation we were having, there are exceptions to that. Like he was like, you know, Who Let the Dogs Out, or like, you know, the Macarena. Like those songs are exceptions that just become these like moment, like they become anthems, but like for no really good reason, kind of thing. But and those are the exceptions. But for the majority of the 99 other songs for every 100,
Yeah.
it's as authentic.
It is
Yeah,
interesting
it's
because it's
very
like
interesting.
more, I mean, that's like more into like the songwriting philosophy, but I thought
Sure.
about that recently because like I have songs that I love. I've been analyzing this a lot recently, like Good Life by OneRepublic. This could really be the good life, good life. Oh, song doesn't like, and you listen to the lyrics, song doesn't like lyrically mean anything. And as a songwriter, I currently am, it would be very hard for me to write that song because I would be like in the session and I would be like, what does this mean? But it, so I'm like trying to push myself. I'm like, why does that song hit me? And it can be anything. It can be like, you know, people listen to music to feel things. They watch art to feel things. They look at things. And it's like, maybe you just have to be very flexible with yourself, like, and know what you like, because maybe it's the drums, you know, and the drums like make you go like, yeah, I love this tempo. I want to dance. Bam. That's like a song. That's a real emotion. That's a feeling. Maybe it's the melody. It just like anything that makes you feel something.
Yeah, it's super interesting, man. You ever hear the song by the Blues Travelers called "The Hook"?
No.
Dude, you gotta check it out. It's what I'm sure you probably heard it. It's just like one of those tracks that like you've probably heard somewhere at some point. And it's fascinating because he talks about in the song. It's one, a relatively popular song, and two, a very catchy song. And like people like love listening to it, love you like hear it at like, you know, all these bars and stuff, people covering and stuff. But it's literally about the lyrics of the song say, I could write anything in this hook, and as long as there's a good melody, you would sing along. And that's the concept of the song. And he's like singing about literally nothing. And it's like, and even that to some degree, it's like, man, you know, here we have trying to pour our heart out in some things, you know, and then this guy's writing about literally nothing. And it's just such a songwriting is such an interesting thing, man.
It's so interesting. Yeah, I don't know.
So
Hey.
you're in Kara's class, you song is ripped apart, but then it turns you into a better songwriter.
Yeah, so I really work on
What
it,
comes from
and
that?
I think Kara sees how hard I'm working. And there was like a day where we played original music, and I played the song that I have out called "Drunk Me." Go stream on Spotify.
Yeah, for sure.
And it hadn't come out yet. And the main line at the end is, "Sober me thinks he can forget, but drunk me's not over you yet." And Kara's like so lyrical focused, and she like loved that line. I think she signed me off that one line. Spoilers.
Wow, so she ended up signing you.
Yeah, so she
Shoot.
ended up signing me.
Okay.
So from there, I
Wow.
stayed in contact with her. I mean, I really just like worked my ass off because I just knew what she could do for me. And that was like in my mind, that was like my way, my plan. And I like to like make this into a more overarching like lesson about how you can get to the music industry, because it's like obviously not everybody's gonna be able to go to Berkeley, get into this class,
But
whatever.
I think that there are, even in that, there are specific points that people can draw from, like, you know, working your tail off, like creating relationships, being open to opportunity, not having a plan B. Like, I think there are, even if it's very your specific story, it's like songwriting, bro. Even
Yeah.
if it's your specific thing, there are certain things that we all relate to.
Definitely. And for me, it was like I found that avenue to success. And once I found that, I like worked my ass off towards it.
Sure.
And the thing is, I could have failed. Kara could have not signed me. And would that have been a waste of time? It's like, no, because every time you fail, you're like one step closer to success.
100%. Every no is one step closer to a yes.
Yeah, exactly. And it's like, I failed getting to a Harvard Berkeley thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I produced hundreds of songs that never come out. Hundreds of songs that didn't do anything. I wrote like hundreds of bad songs. And at any point there, I could have given up. You know, or like at the fail. I mean, like I really was tempted when I didn't get into the Harvard Berkeley thing to like give up on music forever.
Mm-hmm.
And that is like when I see people who are successful, that is like what is the difference. It's like failure is not really fail. The only time you really fail is when you didn't try, you know, because failure is not really failure. Like every single person I've seen failed hundreds of times before they succeeded time, you know? And as you get better at your craft, as you get better, like you're raising your odds, you know, it's like when preparation meets hard work and when preparation meets luck. So I felt like at this point, like Kara saw the potential. We talked for like a year after that. After the class, we kept on emailing back and forth. I would send her songs every week. I kept in touch. She invited me to her house in Nashville. So I like flew out there, did like a writing trip in Nashville. And eventually she offered me the deal, which I was so excited about because I mean, obviously like John Bunyan is a big influence of mine. And it was just like a very surreal moment. I remember getting the phone call from her and being like, wow, you know, but from there, amazing, I got, thank you. I got signed in the college and I had about a year left. So actually, no, I got signed 2020 and I just graduated. End of 2021. I guess kind of a year. And yeah, I don't know. That was like the big, like.
So you were signed as an artist then?
No, I was signed as, so that's publishing. So I got a publishing deal.
Oh, signed as a songwriter then.
So I was signed as a songwriter. Which is actually interesting because Kara saw me up until that point. Like I said, I've been mainly a producer for people. But Kara heard that Drunk Me song and like mainly saw me as a songwriter. She forgets I produce. She calls me sometimes. She's like, oh yeah, you produce.
Like, so yep. For people that aren't super familiar with the background of the music industry, can you elaborate on to that a little bit? The being song, being signed as a publisher, like a publishing signing deal.
Yeah. So there's a couple different deals you can get, which help, you know. It's like a record deal is being an artist, so like a record label reaches out to you, offers you a deal. They want to promote your artist project, they want you to work on your own music, they're pouring money into music videos budget. And then there's a publishing deal, which is more the songwriter producer behind the scenes side. So there's like a whole underground side of the industry in which you're writing for other people, you know. Like for example, my publisher puts me in with people every week. I have a calendar full of like, okay, you're putting in with this producer, or you're going to work with this songwriter today, or you're going to work with this artist. So what you're exchanging there is when you make money from writing a song, it's called publishing.
Mm-hmm.
And when you sign with a publishing company, you are giving up like a percentage, like half your percentage of the writing portion of money.
Mm-hmm. Is it about 50%? Well, I don't know if you can go into the details, but I'm just,
it would be like a very complicated topic to get into. Sure.
Okay,
it usually is 50%. Yeah,
but like, they're the ones getting you in the door with all these opportunities, essentially.
Yeah, and it's like they also collect the money. A big part of the publishing company is that they collect the money like internationally, so which is not something you can do on your own.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very interesting. So then you stay in touch with Kara. She signs you as with a publishing deal.
Yeah. And then from there on, she is like championing me. And that's the reason I signed with her, is not because of like, you know, the money from like the deal or anything, or I don't know, not the not what's on paper of the deal, you know, but what the, what I knew she could do for me. And like, I knew she really believed in me. It's really important to have like a small team around you, whoever it is, that really believes in you and is going to fight for you. Because I believe like if I didn't have any hits or like was struggling for success like 6 years from now, I know Kara believes in me regardless of any outside numbers,
mm-hmm.
you know, like success. The reason she signed me is because she believes in me and my songwriting.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So it's like that was, I'm so grateful for that, to have that. And she has been such a great champion. But I think it's like important to find these mentors or find these people.
Yeah. You know? Absolutely.
And they find you a lot of the time if you're working super hard. But she, once I got signed to this publishing company, they started introducing me to people all the time in LA. I would do, it was like peak pandemic, so I would do Zoom sessions. So I would, we would write songs over Zoom. And that we like went on for like, I don't know, 2 years, a year and a half. And at the same time, I've been producing for some artists at Berkeley that kind of popped off. Specifically, Loyvey, L-A-U-F-E-Y. I did her whole first EP in Boston in my apartment. And Avery Lynch as well.
Mm-hmm.
I did the whole first EP. So I had like a little bit of producing success with these artists. And things kind of just like gradually started to, I don't know, like names getting out there. You know, you're working with these artists. It is, it's really cool to build something like that.
Sure.
See it kind of like, I forget what that's, what is it called? Like
Snowball.
Snowball. Yep. And yeah, I don't know. From there, it was just like, I kept working. And it felt like when I got signed, it was like just the beginning.
Absolutely.
You know?
Yeah, it's very fascinating, man. It's really interesting to hear the whole culmination. I'm actually really glad you went through the whole story, because I think it adds a lot of value. Now, let's talk about some of the stuff you're currently working on, or like whatever you're obviously allowed to talk about. But today, it's a part of how I found you and your music. Is actually through an artist named Blue Eyes, which actually a song is coming out today. I'm not exactly sure when this video will air, but today is Friday the 22nd of July, and Blue Eyes is, you produce a track with Blue Eyes called I Wish I Never Met You, which is a banger, and I'm pretty pumped about that. So congratulations on that, first of all. Second of all, how did you guys get connected?
Yeah, so Katie, who is Blue Eyes, I met Katie over Zoom like 2 years ago. It was one of those sessions that my publisher set up. So it was just like randomly on the calendar. Show up to the Zoom call. I'm like, hi, Blue Eyes, I'm Davin. And we wrote a couple songs. I forget the first song. The first song we did was called If I Were a Friend, which is on Spotify now.
Mm-hmm.
Totally did that over Zoom.
That's wild. So how does that work with artists that like, so Blue Eyes or Katie, like how did she get involved with your publishing group that then set her up with you? Like, how does that industry work?
Yeah. At the time, my publishing company, I had this day-to-day called Megan McLaughlin, who is incredibly hardworking. She no longer works in my publishing company, but at the time she was like my day-to-day. She was sitting on my calendar, reaching out to people. I think she just like, I mean, she was as much a part of the process of me having any success as I was. She reached out to Blue Eyes over TikTok. I think she probably saw like a TikTok and reached out and was like, hey, I'm Megan with Art House. I have this producer I think he'd be great to work with. And then, you know, which you can do on your own, you know, like really start reaching out to these people. And if you find someone you want to work with them.
Absolutely. Completely agree. I mean, to some degree, that's how you and I met.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Exactly. Legit, man. So what's next in the career for Davin?
Yeah, I just moved out here 9 months ago. I've been writing and producing like every day.
How do you like it out there? Orlando to Boston is a big difference. And then Boston, actually it's less of a difference than Boston to LA. Because New York to LA is a very big difference culturally. So I'm curious your experience.
I love LA. I personally always loved it. I mean, I would take trips out here beforehand and like work with people and just the energy anywhere for me, really. I think I could live in New York too, but like for me, I remember the big thing when I moved to Boston is I was like surrounded by all these creative musical people. And I came from like a small town where I was the only person doing music or, you know, like really producing whatever. And when I got to Boston, I was like so inspired by everybody around me.
Yeah.
And same thing in LA is how I've like so many creatives, so many people who have made that decision of being like, this is what I'm doing with my life. And you're already like, you're already like-minded individuals.
Mm-hmm.
So
for sure.
I love it out here. I mean, I love the weather. It's gorgeous. I love the whole vibe. Every week I'm driving the 405 and I see the view and I'm like, wow, very lucky to live here.
Have you gone up to the Tom Petty track? What is it called? Mulholland?
Yeah, I have. I live like very close to Mulholland.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So yeah, man, that's a sick view at night, Mulholland Drive.
Yeah.
Fun LA fact, actually. You know how on Mulholland Drive, first of all, Mulholland's like a 45-mile road, which most people don't realize. But the typical part that most people talk about is where you see oversee the city of LA.
Yeah,
it's beautiful, right? So you notice how some parts have guardrails and some parts don't? The places that have guardrails are the places the cars have gone off the hill.
Wow, that's terrifying.
Isn't that wild?
So wild. That totally makes
sense. It is an interesting fun fact about LA.
I'm going to think about that now.
It's pretty wild. Every time you see a guardrail, it's like, shoot, a car went off the side of the road there.
You just I mean,
what was it?
You do just be on a cliff, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, that road, I'm surprised the whole thing isn't honestly guardrailed, because it's pretty wild, and people whip around those corners for sure, man. That is too funny. So... Yeah. Two questions. One is will be the first question and then the final question for you. But in your experience in producing, what have you noticed what stands out to you as a producer? Like what makes you hear? I mean, being somebody that produces my own music, like we hear music differently at this point. It's like, this is actually a great example because you said you were very into video editing. I, as somebody that does a lot of YouTube, a lot of, you know, even before I was full-time music, I tried to make extra money by doing video work for companies and stuff. So, you know, I know how the lens works. I know how editing works and stuff. So, like, now when I'm watching TV shows or movies, like, you see things that people don't see. In music, you hear things that people don't hear. So it's, like, almost hard to break out of that to some degree and just enjoy something, right? So does anything stick out to you as a song? I'm kind of actually moving... elaborating on the question, has there been a song recently that has kind of gotten you out of that? Because I noticed probably one out of every 1,000 songs like snaps me out of it, and I'm like, wow, this is just a sick song. And then of course I go back and dissect it, but 90% of the time I'm always dissecting. It's when that one song gets me out of it, I'm just like loving the song. I'm curious if there's any artists or songs recently that have done that for you.
It is a tough thing, because I was thinking about this recently. Like, I never listen to music just as a listener, you know. It's just kind of a curse of like working on this so hard and understanding 100%. Like going through the craft and everything. Like, I'm like,
absolutely,
what's the tempo, like why did they pick these drums? It's like everything. And I'd say like a big indicator for me is when I don't think about that, which is like so rare. I mean, when
that's
a song
comes on,
I'm like, whoa, and I don't even think about the chords, I don't think about like the lyric, like I just like listen. I always am like, you know, that's a pretty rare experience for me right now.
And I completely agree. Does anything stick out like specifically to you? Like any track?
I love this artist, Amelia Moore. If you listen to Amelia Moore.
All right, Amelia Moore.
Signed to Capitol. She just released her first EP. She's incredible. It's called Teaching a Robot to Love.
Huh. All right.
It's produced by this producer, Pink Slip.
Oh, yeah, I know Pink Slip. Well, I know of the name. I don't personally know Pink Slip. I've heard of the name.
He's incredible. And the EP is like just inspiring. It's like really, you hear so much of the same thing that whenever, like, I think it's really important to always actively push to try to be different.
Mm.
You know, and you look at the most successful producers and songwriters, and they did something different. You know, they did something that made them iconic, that you listen to it and you go, that is.
Well, it's actually really interesting because, again, referencing the conversation I had with somebody earlier, they were saying that a lot of times authenticity leads to this uniqueness that ends up being your personal stamp, right? It's like when the lack of authenticity is when we're trying to pander to what's popular or just write to what's popular. And it's like when you actually take a step back and be like, what's authentic to me? as an artist, you be you, that's when like your uniqueness comes out. Because, you know, whether we could have the same exact life experiences, but like even just temperament wise, like we're different. Everybody's different. So everybody has a unique perspective on certain things, right? So we all have this unique artistry in us. And as soon as you start to look inside yourself, right, and can, that's where the true authenticity comes out, and that's where the true uniqueness comes out, and the true difference comes out.
Oh, absolutely. And it's really that, I think that's the hardest thing to do, honestly, like keep in touch with that inner artistry and like authenticity and who you are. But like, it's so important to actively pursue that.
I couldn't agree more. Absolutely, man. Well, I want to be respectful of your time. This has been an absolutely phenomenal conversation. You've touched on a couple different points, but I'm curious. The final question I like asking everybody is, what is one thing you currently know now in your career that you wish you knew when you first started off?
It's possible.
Mmm.
Yeah.
Preach, really, man.
More than possible, you know?
Preach. That's a great answer. I love that answer. That's phenomenal. That's good stuff. Well, I really appreciate you taking the time. If you could hang out for two more minutes, I just want to say thank you very much for everybody that watched this and made it to the end. You guys are the true ones. Definitely go check out Davin's music. Go check out all the stuff that he's produced. Go check out his website. You can see all the stuff that he's currently working on and worked on in the past. So go check it out. All the social media stuff will be in the description below. Best way to support this channel is checking out my own original music. Have a wonderful rest of your day. God bless and peace out.